Well, the war on drugs seen as a failure, as South American countries blame U.S. drug policies for fueling cartel violence. But for some industries, the war on drugs is a profitable business. As the battle to crack down on minor drug offenses rages on, some companies are cashing in and getting rich. And it's these companies that pump enormous amounts of money into lobbying Congress so that drug policies continue to work in their favor. So who's benefiting? Contractors. The government spent over $6 billion on private contractors between 2005 and 2009. But that's not all. The drug testing industry is another one that's cashing in. The alcohol industry, private prisons, and drug rehabs are all reeling in the dough over the war on drugs. So who is really benefiting from the war on drugs, and will the U.S. change its failed policies? To discuss this, earlier I was joined by Mike Riggs. He's an associate editor at Reason Magazine, and I asked him where the billions of dollars allocated to the war on drugs actually go. Take a listen.
At the top, it's going to enforcement efforts, so, you know, police budgets, municipal, state police budgets, federal police budgets. The DEA, for instance, has 10,000 employees, offices in over 60 countries. And then as it sort of trickles down, as you see the web spread, I mean, it goes everywhere. It goes to rehabilitation facilities, which are increasingly becoming an alternative to incarceration. And that's not, they're not an alternative because by chance or by luck, they're an alternative to incarceration because addiction treatment facilities are saying, make us an alternative to incarceration. The drug testing industry, again, because, you know, you're not allowed to have marijuana in your system at all, and it can interfere with, you know, like workers' compensation benefits if somebody's injured on the job and they've had marijuana in their system. So these companies spring up to develop technology to test for drugs. And then you can look at, obviously, the alcohol industry, the private prison industry. It goes out, though. There's more. There trial lawyers enjoy this sort of, the benefits of this. Tobacco companies do, and then military and defense contractors. So it's really everybody's getting in on it. And I would go so far as to say that we spend, you know, tens of billions directly and maybe tens of billions more even indirectly on fighting the drug war.
And so we are spending billions, and all these industries are profiting from this.
Oh, definitely.
But is it money well spent? Are we seeing any of this drug use curb within the U.S.?
No, it's not. And I think what we're seeing, what the trend is going to be, is as we shift to a public health approach, you're going to see less incarceration in prisons, but you're not going to see less damage done to people's reputations, their work life, their families. I mean, being forced to go to a rehab facility, those are expensive. They can sometimes have a waiting line. They're not always the most effective thing. I'm not sure that that's going to be great for people's freedom. Having to get drug tested regularly as part of your probation or as part of your punishment, I'm not sure that that's great for America's freedom. I think what we're just going to see is a sort of softer form of paternalism in the war on drugs. Maybe less no-knock raids, but no less interference in people's lives and what they do in the privacy of their own homes.
Meanwhile, the war on drugs isn't stopping people from doing drugs.
Absolutely.
As you just said. Instead, what it seems to be doing is just packing our jails with more people on even minor drug violations. And of course, who is benefiting from this? As you mentioned, the prison, the private prison industry.
Definitely.
Can you talk a little bit about how they are benefiting from having people locked up?
Yeah, I mean, so what they're promising shareholders is what their offer is as states continue to pack their prisons, join the United States incarcerates more people than any other country in the world. Prisons in the United States just aren't built to handle this capacity. Every state in the country has prisons that are way over capacity. So what groups like the GEO Group of Florida and Corrections Corps of America, what they're offered to do is they build these prisons really cheaply to house overflow inmates. And for the most part, they're low-level offenders. They're nonviolent offenders, which means that they're drug users. And CCA said in their annual report in 2010 to shareholders, they said there are some things that are beyond our control, such as how states decide to handle the drug war. You know, if they were to decriminalize or legalize or decide that they want lighter punishments, that's going to hurt our bottom line. And so on the one hand, in that report, they say these things are sort of beyond our control. But on the other hand, they have spent a significant amount of money lobbying for harsh laws, for three strikes laws, for mandatory minimums. And, you know, they're doing it because there's an incentive to lobby for those kinds of laws.
Now, President Obama recently returned from the Summit of the Americas in Colombia, and the president of Colombia and other South American countries urged him to change drug policies. One thing that they even recommended was the legalization of certain drugs. Oh, President Obama wasn't exactly on board. Here's what he had to say on the subject.
I don't mind a debate around issues like decriminalization. I personally don't agree that that's a solution to the problem. But I think that given the pressures that a lot of governments are under here, mm-hmm. under-resourced, overwhelmed by violence, it's completely understandable that they would look for new approaches, and we want to cooperate with them. I don't think that legalization of drugs is going to be the answer.
So he is facing this pressure now from the presidents of these South American countries because they're saying it's fueling drug violence in their area, and they're pushing for a reform because simply, I mean, as we've seen, the war on drugs isn't working. And President Obama, he's saying legalization isn't the solution, but you didn't hear him propose any other alternatives,
no.
any other possible solutions. So if not legalization, what are some of the possible alternatives?
Well, looking back at the 2012 drug policy control report that the White House released last week, their idea of solutions is basically drug courts and pushing people into rehab instead of incarcerating them. I don't think this changes. I mean, that is a strategy. The White House strategies, what they've decided to do that's they're calling innovative, it's not really innovative, is for users. The White House still does not have a solution to black market violence, which we're seeing in Central America and South America. Some countries are even refusing to participate in our drug war program because they're so terrified of this and the ramifications it's had. Colombia is very slow. I mean, Colombia is touted as a model because of the Colombia plan in the 1990s, the way the United States went after cartel leaders down there, is that this is, Colombia is the model going forward. Well, Colombia no longer wants to fight the drug war. They're not interested in this anymore. Felipe Calderon is slowly, Mexico's president has slowly been walking back his support. And the Obama administration might not want to talk about legalization, but they have literally nothing else to talk about. They have no other proposals. And this whole idea that that the drug war in Central and South America is underfunded is a complete myth. I mean, we allotted $1.4 billion to Mexico for the Merida Initiative to help them fight the drug war. And that money has led to increased violence, 50,000 deaths since 2006. And as well as human rights abuses by Mexico police.
And so. How difficult would it be, Mike, to make changes to these policies, policies that seem to be failing when there are so many businesses making so much money off of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big question. I'm not sure that drug policy reform advocates have moved this far in the debate yet, but what we're going to be looking at is how do we answer the question of what kind of jobs program is the drug war? And essentially, that's what it is now. It's not a public safety campaign. It doesn't, any public safety that taking a drug dealer off the street is completely eliminated by the fact that you're encouraging this competition to move in with violence. So it's what do you do with the 10,000 agents that work for the DEA? What do you do with over 1.2 million law enforcement officers in the United States who either are, you know, some of them are assigned to the drug war, but many, many more get their funding from asset forfeiture when they conduct a drug raid and they confiscate houses, cars, money. So the question becomes, like, if we decide to end the war on drugs, which I think it's inevitable, it's not working, and, you know, for the first time in America's history, we have a majority of people who want to legalize marijuana, for instance. So the question becomes, what do you do with all these people, and how do you reallocate those resources to where they're being, you know, productive and less harmful towards Americans? And I don't have an answer to that question, but I think that's where the debate is moving.
And we are seeing that he has more pressure on him to do something, and it's been a decade since this war on drugs has been dragging on. How long can it drag on before some real changes are made?
Yeah. That's a great question. We have 16 states with medical marijuana now, plus the District of Columbia. Colorado and Washington both have legalization efforts on their ballots in November. So I don't think this is going to come from the top down. I think what we're going to see more of is we're going to see more states legalize or decriminalize, and then we're not going to see any bad effects from that. You know, we're not going to see an increase in car accidents. We're not going to see an increase in violence. We're not going to see an increase in, youth truancy or bad grade, anything like that. And I think once those cases start to make themselves, and for instance, we already have Portugal as a great example of what decriminalization can do. I think once just that, as you know, the slow march of history will eventually change policy for us.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike, for coming on the show. That was Mike Riggs, Associate Editor of Reason Magazine.